Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you, O God, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So a show of hands, who here likes sci-fi or fantasy genres in literature, movies, or television? Okay. Who here likes suspense or psychological thrillers? Who here likes political commentaries? Okay, there were fewer hands on that one. Well, then you've come to the church on the right Sunday because our passage this morning comes from a book in the Bible that fits all of those descriptions. And over the years, I've had various encounters with the book of Revelation, or the Revelation according to John, or John's Apocalypse, as it's been known in some ways. And so to this day, I approach this book with extreme caution and intention, reading very carefully and being attentive to the details, trying hard not to get caught up in the end of the world interpretations, because as powerful as they can be and as descriptive as they are, they can be potentially damaging spiritually. Another thing about this text is the misnomer of the name John's Apocalypse, or even the word Revelation as the title of the book itself. Because these words, Revelation and Apocalypse, do not have the same meaning as end of the world or end times. In fact, in biblical literature, Apocalypse and Revelation have a connotation of, I was going to say, peeling back the layers of an onion, which when I read through the book of Revelation, it does kind of make me want to cry the more I read it because of how harsh it feels, especially when you get a really ripe onion, it just tears instantly. But Revelation and Apocalypse have these connotations of unveiling, of pulling back the layers, and as Stephen Motier points out, unlike Jesus' parables, which some of which come with interpretation, the genre known as apocalyptic literature in the Bible doesn't. So we're left to try and figure out Revelation's meaning based on, it's ascribed to John, so do we try and interpret it in light of John's gospel? Is it the historical context which Brian gave us? Ancient letters and commentaries written by saints long past? The letters attributed to John that Pastor Mary Kay read from a couple weeks ago? Or do we try and figure it out, its meaning, based on the apocalyptic tradition in Hebrew, in the Hebrew scriptures? How do we begin to try and understand this text? As I was preparing for the sermon, I appreciated one commentator's words on this specific passage. Catherine A. Shaner says that what John the seer describes is not the future like a crystal ball. Instead, John's vision lets us see God's home among us without the veil of human destruction and violence. And to that effect, Greg Carey makes it a point to describe the events in Revelation 21 as a sort of homecoming for God. It's my interpretation of his words. And this is something that we can work with. Our passage tells us of this heavenly city coming down and merging with our world. The time has come when the heavenly and the earthly realms become one and exist as a new creation. This passage talks about the transforming power of God, and yes, it does so in some outdated and very gendered metaphors of the traditional roles of the bride. But it talks about God descending and the heaven descending and meeting us here, becoming part of the world that we already know. God is no longer beyond or seemingly outside of this reality. Rather, God becomes an integral part of it. God becomes part of our reality, not the other way around. So I want you all to reflect with me for a minute. This idea of God becoming part of our reality. Take a moment and pause and peel back the layers of the onion, if you'll entertain me that metaphor for just a little while longer. Let us all take a moment and rest in the feelings of the holy that we have experienced in our lives, like the awe in nature, the joy found in laughter, the strength we have found to overcome a great pain, the comfort we have found when we have felt abandoned or without anyone who could understand what we were or are going through. Imagine for a moment those emotions of overwhelming awe, joy, strength, and courage and comfort that pour out from the depths of our spirits are now permanent fixtures of reality. Keep peeling back those layers, searching for and calling forth a world where the hungry are fed, the hurting are comforted, the thirsty are quenched, injustice is no more, oppression is no more. We are our own, and the only voice that guides our path is God's. Peel back the layers, searching for the place where it is peace and it is good, with a capital G. Search for that world that is, as Catherine Shaner put it, God's home among us, without the veil of human destruction and violence. What does that world look like? What is our part in that world, in that new creation, in that place where the heavenly and the earthly have met and have become one? This past Tuesday night, the deacons' meeting began with a devotional from a book by theologian Henry Nouwen. A question was asked specifically about prayer that night. What does it mean to pray with God already in our hearts versus praying to or at God? And I'll repeat that question. What does it mean to pray with God already in our hearts versus praying to or at God? This question led to some interesting discussion about praying with the mind of God already with us, praying with a God who is active and participates in our lives rather than a God who is distant, far off, and seemingly unattainable. When you all pray, do you pray with God, or do you pray at or to God? Does this question invite any sort of response? Does it feel different? Would it mean for us to pray and to believe in an active and participatory God? And if you're thinking that this seems an awful lot like a play on semantics and language, you'd be right, because if we hold this passage in light of John's gospel, John refers to Jesus or the Christ as the Logos, which literally means the Word, as a philosophical and theological concept. And Jesus is there at the beginning as part of beginning itself, and in our passage this morning, the Christ is describing themselves as the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last letters of the Greek alphabet, the beginning and the end. And throughout the Bible, all the way going back to the first chapter of Genesis, we see language and speech as being an active and creative force. After all, when we read or listen to books, there are these things we call letters, which when ordered in a particular way, are used to describe the familiar, the outrageous, and the incomprehensible, as a means of trying to connect us with a world we don't fully grasp. The words on the page or in our speakers or our earbuds challenge us to interpret and understand the characters we encounter, their stories, as well as challenging us to interpret and understand our stories in new and different ways. Our passage for today challenges us to hear, see, feel the words about where God is in our reality, but also where we are in God's. And if we are somewhere in between the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. It's a lot to chew on. Perhaps these ideas are, here we go again with that onion, are like that onion we've been working on. Perhaps they're a little astringent, perhaps a little potent, but with a flavor all its own, and yet there's something all too familiar, because even if we don't like onions, we all have a pretty good sense of what they taste like. I think as 21st century mainline Protestant Christians, something's missing. We're really good at rationalizing our tasks and understanding them in a very tangible way. We call it mission, we call it ministry. These are the things that we do, and it's all good and wonderful. We get what it means to live out God's call and to do the work of love. But the question asked at Deacons on Tuesday reminded me to continue searching for the act of God in prayer, in ministry, and in life. It caused me to pause and ask myself, do I pray with God? Or do I pray to or at God? Challenges me to reflect on that question. Do I pray to a God that is distant, strange, and far away? Or do I pray to a God who is present, active, and engaged in my own life and in the life of all those I serve? It has been a reminder to be still and listen and talk with God in heart and in mind. It has been a reminder to not just sit by and passively wait for salvation, for joy, courage, comfort, and love, but to actively participate in it because of where we are and where God is in this new creation. Somewhere between the Alpha and the Omega, somewhere where the earthly and the heavenly realms connect and create something new.